Hello and welcome, ladies and gentlemen, to Good Areas Live. I'm Behram Kazi, who you can find at Def Mango on Twitter. And with me, as always, is Jared Kimber, who you can find literally everywhere. And we had another rainout today. Of course, we've had three now, Jared. Three washouts, of course, of the Champions Trophy. And this one, well, pretty much got washed out because I think someone forgot to cover one of the run-ups on one end, unfortunately. Probably got overwhelmed by that rain.
I think it was going to be washed out anyway. But once they didn't cover the runout when it was pouring, because do you remember early on when the ball was hit out to Ben Dorsius and the ball and he ran past it because it got stuck in the outfield? Mm-hmm. Like, I think they were already pushing that ground as much as they could. So once they did that, it was gone, I think.
Yeah. Plus, like, the rain was so heavy, like, it was such insane downpour that could have, like, ended a wedding event or something. So what's a cricket game, right? But anyway, even if that game had continued, I reckon Afghanistan would have found themselves knocked out of the Champions Trophy, as they are after the washout as well. I mean, Australia were rampant. 90 for one in the power play, 109 for one in 12.5 overs when the rain arrived, and Travis Head was unbeaten on 59 of 40. But then again, you know, I saw Afghanistan drop those catches again, and that seems to be a theme with them, isn't it?
They couldn't control the ball early on, and they still created three early chances. If they'd just taken one or two catches there, I thought it was a defendable total. But they were all over the shop, right? And that's the difference. I mean, Australia were all over the shop as well, but Australia pulled it back and you know, got themselves into a good position.
Yeah, I mean, look, Travis Head was swinging for the hills, and that's what he does. He will cut you, he will pull you, he will go big, you know, off his hips. And they dropped him on six. They also dropped an injured Matt Short. Not that that might have made a big difference, but at least, like, it would have kept them in the game and would have had them ahead of the game. I was actually looking really forward to watching Fazal Ahmed Farooqi square up against Travis Head under lights. And that would have been a battle that Farooqi would have won. But then, of course, Travis Head is Travis Head. Best all-format batter in contemporary cricket. And the rest is history. Didn't even matter with the rain around. But if you look at Afghanistan's
Was he dropped
yes.
off?
He was also dropped, and Short was also dropped.
But was that off Fazal Haq?
Off Fazal Haq. Yeah. It was.
But it was also the LBW that they didn't review, which was, I don't know how you play that ball.
It was sliding down leg, though, that one.
No, but I'm saying that's all he had to do is continually bowl there, and he created a chance. Like, he should have got him out, right?
Yeah, and it's not like Australia was super disciplined either. 37 extras. Sundries were the third highest scorer, right, for Afghanistan?
Early on, wasn't it? Weren't they I could be wrong.
17 runs, and I think 14 extras, something like that.
Yeah, and it was, even when they were up at like 26, it was like 16 extras. It was horrendous. Like, Australia was so bad early on. Really, Afghanistan made the biggest mistake there by winning the toss and deciding to bat first. And they got away with it because Australia just kept bowling wides, right? Yeah. And the play, and then even when they bowled so wide of the stumps that it was just plays and misses.
Yeah, I mean, it wasn't just the extras. There was one run out chance that I have no idea why the fielder didn't throw the ball to the keeper. It was a clear run out. And then there was, well, I'm not going to call that Matt Short drop a drop because he did well to get there. Yeah. But this was still the most extras conceded by Australia in an ICC fixture. And there was the non-review as well. They had gotten Siddiqullah LBW and off Nathan Ellis's bowling, and they never reviewed that. But either way, none of these things mattered, but because on the day Australia, they were strong enough. And
it didn't matter because there was no result anyway. Yeah, so
no result, yeah. But what did you make of that surface? It wasn't a conventional belter, was it?
No, I mean, It certainly early on, it was all over the place. There was swing and there was seam. I didn't think it came on beautifully for the spinners as well. I was really interested to see how the Afghanistan spinners would have gone in the middle if it had continued to go that way. So I think there were plenty of different things, to go for from there. So yeah, they were definitely at that stage. It seemed to me like there was enough there. I thought 280 was a good score. But not if you bowl absolute dross down the leg side and drop every catch that comes to you. And also, they got a couple of edges in inside edges, didn't they, for four? Like, both teams looked a little bit ropey against that new ball, and both teams actually got really good starts.
I feel like that first 10 over spell of the game, you know, first power play when Afghanistan were batting was probably my favorite moment of this entire Champions Trophy. Like, you know, you had Spencer Johnson cleaning up Gurbaz, who by the way, failed thrice in this tournament, right? With a Stark-like Yorker. It was Stark-like. That's what Ian Smith even called it. And then he goes on to bowl some unplayable deliveries and then some really crazy wides. Ends up with 2 for 49, which was the most entertaining spell of the game. It really was theater, wasn't it? Because Afghanistan should have lost like 3 wickets in that power play. Yet they ended up with, what, 54 for one? Something like that?
Yeah. And they were cruising by the end of it, right? Like that's it, how much it went around. Yeah. Look, we know Australia's bowling's not great. I just think Spencer Johnson had a really bad day and Dwarshius didn't really step up. Like he didn't bowl poorly, but he didn't really affect the game at all.
Isn't it crazy that Dwarshius hasn't bowled particularly well in this entire Champions Trophy and he had 3 for 66 versus England and 3 for 47 today and he's the second highest wicket taker of this tournament.
Yeah. No, it's crazy.
Yeah. Also, Matt Short going for 21 runs in 7 overs. That was wild. Who would have seen that one coming?
Yeah, and that, I think, suggests that the wicket may not have been great.
Yeah. No, it was really random, you know. Even Afghanistan, look, they got to 273, but they lost Gurbaz. They lost Ibrahim Zadran off a really poor delivery. He would be kicking himself. And then Rehmat also fell. Nubby got run out. Some really poor dismissals in there.
The Nubby run out, by the way, is hilarious. Like, I was like, what are you doing? Go back. I'm screaming at the TV because I'm like, oh my God. And they should have lost. Was it Noor who should have been run out? When he just left the crease and Australia retracted the appeal. Johnny Bairstow must be furious somewhere for that. But I'm looking at it going, why are you leaving the crease?
Yeah, I was really surprised actually. I thought that was out and I wouldn't have rescinded my appeal or taken it back. But maybe Steve Smith thinks about these things differently because he was very clear over there. Or maybe if Alex Carey had the gloves this time, he was like, you know, we've done it once, we'll do it again. But I don't know. I don't know much about that. Also, can we just spend like a minute talking about how shit Hashmatullah's innings was 20 or 49. Like they ended up with 274. It could have been 300 if not for Hashmat's treacherous knock.
What was worse, his knock or his final shot?
Yeah, I mean, honestly, his knock. Because at least he was trying to clear the fielder at short fine. At least he had a plan with the shot. I don't know if he had a plan with the knock.
It was just bad. It was all bad. Look, he's a limited player who suits their game plan. And some days he's going to get stuck and he got stuck.
Yeah, absolutely. But there were a few performers for Afghanistan, of course. They're out of the tournament, but I was really impressed by Sadiqullah Atal. He wasn't the guy we expected to perform. He's young, new to the scene. A very, very attractive bat, turns out, right? That cover drive that he hit early on was just scintillating. And he wasn't really like forgiving off his legs. He was pretty good in that region. Then those big hits versus spin. That's what really, really attracted me because they could potentially even use him in their T20 side if he comes in the middle overs and just is there to whack spin. So he's definitely an option for them going forward. I mean, 85 versus Australia, you'd take that.
Yeah, it was an odd innings. I've seen him bat 5 or 6 times now. He doesn't seem to understand how to start an innings at all.
Yeah.
And then he gets absolutely lost and goes crazy from that moment onwards. But yeah, he's... his numbers against spin are really, really bad at the moment, weirdly enough. So it'd be interesting to see. Yeah, if you'd seen the scoreboard, you'd be like,
that's crazy.
He hasn't played a lot of games.
Because in my notes, I was like, okay, he can go big versus spin. That's good.
He certainly could hit sixes against it.
Yeah.
I just see a conversation where someone's really angry that I'm saying Brian Lara is a better bat than Hashim Amla and he's bringing up his raw numbers. It's like, dude, we're so beyond raw numbers on this site. If you're
Varun,
a raw numbers
Varun
person.
Varun can give you the adjusted numbers for these, dude. Ami Mir?
Yeah, no. Maybe you might want to use the laughing emojis on yourself there. But the numbers suggested that. I saw him make runs in South Africa in one of the games in the SA20 as well. He's raw. But there is some talent there, but it's very raw. But this is probably this probably flattered him a little bit at times. Also, I'm not sure Australia really knew where to bowl to him. They seemed a little bit confused, probably because he played and missed so much outside our stump. I think they were like, oh, we'll just keep bowling there. And he actually ended up whacking the ball quite a bit.
Yeah, no, I think like going into the future, he's at least another batting option in the top order, which augurs well for Afghanistan. And he's young and he actually looks young as well, right? Like, he doesn't look that old. So I feel like he might have a career in him. But the star for Afghanistan in my books was Azmatullah Umarzai once again. 67 with the bat, or better than run a ball at a very tricky time. He's the reason they got to 273. Five mighty sixes. Some of them were over 100 meters, right? A couple of them for sure were over 100 meters versus pace and spin. He had five sixes and a solitary boundary, which is a great stat to have. And he was once again clutch. Took the only wicket for Afghanistan as well. Mm. And I feel like now is the time where we will really start to keep a very keen eye on him, because where he goes from here, I mean, he could become the next Hardik Pandya, couldn't he?
Oh, his ceiling's really high. Like, yeah. His issues before was he couldn't bowl him all that much if he wasn't swinging the ball. Hmm. In the space of two games, he's already, you know, impressed me enough where I'm like, or three games, whatever it is. Hmm. Although I don't think he bowled much against South Africa, did he? He's already impressed me that that is something that he's getting over. If he can bowl in multiple periods of the game and not be a draw, not draw away from Afghanistan in any way, that's absolutely huge. And his batting, it's funny, they kind of want, I thought they were going to push him to be a number four, number five. Hmm. They're sort of pushing him a bit further down at the moment to be a number six. He's really good when he gets set. In T20s, I sometimes have issue with him because he tries to slog from the first ball. I don't think that's what he's naturally good at. He's the sort of guy who maybe more like a Marcus Stoinis type player, where you can come in, knock the ball around for a little bit, you know, somewhere between a Stoinis and a Daryl Mitchell, right? Uh-huh. Where you're like, I don't know where he fits. I don't know how high his batting talent is, but he needs just a little bit longer to get going. But once he gets going, he can just hit sixes all the time. Like, yeah, he does have that within him.
Especially that 1-6 that he struck versus pace down the ground. It was a hard length delivery, right? It wasn't particularly in the slot, and he still managed to completely whack it right out of the screws. And I think that one was 104 meters or something. I love that shot. I feel like Azmatullah can go a really long way. He's going to be a starter probably in this year's IPL as well, I feel. He got a lot of games last year as well. So I mean, high ceiling, yes, but also a very unique skill set where you don't see a lot of seam bowling genuine all-rounders out there currently. I mean, Ben Stokes can barely bowl anymore and he's always injured. So it's Hardik Pandya, Azmatullah Umarzai, and probably Wiyan Mulder, Corbin Bosch. I'm thinking those guys. Can you think of more?
There aren't many, are there? I mean, you know, the player he reminds me the most of is no one you just mentioned. It's Baz Dalida.
Okay, yeah. I mean, yeah, that's the same kind of category.
Because I think even compared to, say, like someone like Aaron Hardy, Wiyan Mulder is interesting because I see Wiyan Mulder as a 6-7 at the moment, but I don't think South Africa do long term, right? Mm. So they are going to, I've seen little bits of him. Mm. They will have seen a lot more of him. But I kind of see Umarzai as someone who can bat, as I said, maybe four if they can't find anyone else, but five or six. And then is going to be useful in bowling in two different periods in the game. Mm. And if that's the case, that's basically him and Baz Dalida are very, very similar in that. I don't think either of them are quite top order players. I don't think they quite have the all-round batting. Hmm. And I wonder if, you know, Baz Dalida can't bowl particularly well with the new ball, right? But in the middle and the death, he can. And you're sort of starting to put that together as a player. And also, their ceilings are so high because they could possibly be, at worst, a fifth bowler, right? And in the top five of their batting for their teams. That's a bit different than someone like Corbin Bosch, isn't it? Right. When you think of someone like him, and even Hardik Pandya, I know he can bat at five, but I don't think you'd ever say he's in the top five batting talents that India have. Right.
Yeah. I would always have.
And that's why
these
sides are all different. Yeah.
Yeah.
I mean, if Umarzai played in India, he'd be batting further down the order as well. Like, some of this is same with Baz Dalida, right? Some of this is about that, but you look at the kind of player that he can be in that side. Hmm. He gives them that sort of permanent fifth bowler, right? Without losing anything with the bat. In a way that, say, Sam Curran can't. Sam Curran could probably be your fifth bowler, but you're giving a little bit back with the bat. You're saying he's a little bit more limited with the bat. And, you know, Marcus Stoinis can bat at five, right? But you're not going to be able to get 10 overs out of him.
Yep.
And so there's something slightly different about the potential that Umarzai has. He, you know, he might just be a quick developer, I don't know. But if he keeps going the way he is, he could be fantastic.
Also, Muglu in the comments has mentioned that he is this in this year's IPL, he's going to be with Punjab. Not the best place to be for someone who is an overseas player, I suppose. But I mean, I have high expectations. Let's see where he ends up. Also, just to kind of close up on Afghanistan, right? They're out of the Champions Trophy. The Champions Trophy dream for them is over. It was fun while it lasted. Like, they knocked England out. They were never going to beat South Africa, in my opinion, even if, you know, they were chasing in that game. The only way they were going to beat South Africa was batting first and getting 325 as well, right? Which was going to be really tough for them versus South Africa. How would you rate their tournament overall? Do you think maybe going into the future, they have to tweak the strategy a bit? Maybe start bowling first a bit more to learn more methods of winning a game of ODI cricket?
So I've just done it on the scoreboard where they bat first, whatever it is, 60% of the time, but they actually win far more when they bowl first.
Oh, all right.
Right?
That's interesting.
So what's happening there, Bayram, is my question. I do think against the best side, I understand why they do it, but I think it's a bit of a hangover from they like doing it in T20 cricket. I don't know if they need to do it anymore, but yes, I think at the moment, I think they have one method that they think works for them against very good sides, which is win the toss, bat first, get to par, hopefully get one or two wickets out of your seamers, and then squeeze the game with your spin, right? Everything has to go your way every time for that. Hmm. Yeah, so that doesn't make, you know, they're a more talented side than that. They do have limitations. They do have Rahmat Shah and Shahidi, right? Like, they have limitations within that side.
Those are limitations with capital L's. I mean,
They're also playing Gulbuddin.
Yeah.
Okay. So
Gulbuddin Naib or Goldbergdin, right? Because of the flex.
So with him in that side, they can probably take him out, bring someone else in. If they have, and I don't know if they have, they do actually. Who's the bloke who plays in, who only ever plays in World Cups for them? He played in the wicketkeeper.
Ali Khil. Ibrahim Ali Khil. Yeah, that guy.
I just don't see him as a worse batter than Rahmat Shah or their captain. Like bringing one of them there. So I think they can do a couple of little things for them from that point of view.
Yeah, I mean, look, I feel like even though they've been knocked out in the group stage, there's a lot that they can take away from this tournament. And it's time to evolve from this mentality now that we just are going to bat first, especially if the numbers are showing that. Then I feel like they need a new analyst. Someone needs to talk to them about this stuff. Trotty, if you're listening, maybe it's time to maybe just move on from that kind of mindset. But good show, Afghanistan. Love the fans in the stadium as well. It seemed like their home tournament at times, not Pakistan's, right?
Isn't it great to watch? So, like, young kids in their national colours doing Gulbuddin's, just that sort of stuff. It was just really enjoyable. I think they needed some, you know, maybe if they took those first two catches against Australia, they could have put a little bit more pressure on, and who knows what happens from there. Yeah. But they needed, I think, at 270, 280, they really probably needed head not to go nuts and then control the game with the spinners. And once that got away from them, and it's their own fault. I mean, they were fielding terribly, right? Yep. And they should have taken those chances.
Not the first time they've done this before either. No. But yeah, I mean, this was as close to a home game as they're ever going to get, I feel, with all of the Afghan influx in Pakistan. But it was great to see, and they gave us some wholesome stories, and that'll be that. Coming to Australia, of course, perennial problem solvers in ICC tournaments, chased down 350 versus England when Travis Head and Steve Smith failed. They don't have their entire pace attack either, right? They don't have Mitch Marsh, they don't have Cam Green, and Marcus Stoinis has retired. So Australia are still contenders. They have booked their place in the semi-finals. We don't know who they'll face just yet. But you've got to say, you know, despite Head showing us glimpses of just what he's capable of, and we already knew, and the fact that they've managed to somehow easily make it to a coast through to the semis, you still don't have, or probably don't have them as a team which could probably go on and win this tournament, right?
Be hard to say. Nick Hills just put a comment in saying 40 minutes of rain and the match called off. That's not good enough. It wasn't 40 minutes of rain. It was 36 hours of rain.
Yeah.
And then a brief period without rain. So it's not just that 40 minutes. If the outfield was really bad early on in the game as well. As I said, there was a ball that plugged. Yeah. I'd be shocked if Australia won this tournament. It's only two games, though, isn't it? So it's not impossible for anyone to be able to come from here and win the game. But yeah, I would be quite shocked if they did. I think. Here's the question. Unknown
now
came up. Yeah. Unknown now? Now?
Unknown now? Unknown now, yeah.
His super chat what's is... with all the praise for Smith as captain? He's worse than Cummins' breaking partnership with his field setting. I basically hope I get lucky. So they have almost exactly the same record of taking wickets in this tournament as they did in the World Cup that they did before. And that was with Cummins, Hazelwood, frontline all-rounders. And who am I missing? Stark, right? And he's doing it with Warshus, Spencer Johnson, who can't even hit the pitch half the time at the moment. And Nathan Ellis, who's a defensive bowler. So yeah. Smith's done fine. I haven't been sitting here going, Smith's a genius. But Smith read the wicket quite well at times today. He took the seamers. He brought the seamers back on when they needed a wicket. Like, he did a bunch of things, but I'm not. I didn't see that much praise for him.
Seven overs out of Matt Short, and they went for 21 runs. And at a point, I saw that Short and Maxwell had they were the fifth bowlers combined, and they had bowled 14 to 15 overs combined, right? Yep. So I think that's a win, because that wasn't a disadvantage to Australia in the game. And I mean, that augurs well for them, especially if they're going to play in the UAE next game, right? That's going to be a big one if that happens. We obviously don't know what is going to happen just yet. But anyway, I think that's it for Australia as well. Got no other notes on them. And let's take a short break. And once we're back on Good Areas Live, we will be talking about some of the other teams that have exited the tournament. You're watching Good Areas Live, of course, with Jared and Jehram. So, yeah, stay tuned. Welcome back to Good Areas Live. You guys are with Behram and Jared. Why am I mixing up those things? Why are we Jehram and Jared now?
Didn't we have a whole video last week where our names were mixed up on the video?
So. That's what's fucked with me, clearly. All right, so in terms of teams which have exited the tournament, I feel like England has to be the first team we talk about, because Joss Butler has resigned as limited overs captain. And that is big news and is not big news, because we kind of saw it coming. The writing was on the wall, wasn't it?
Yes, he wasn't probably going to last this. I mean, there was talk that he would go before Mott did. I think part of the reason he was kept around is there's no obvious person to get the job, right? So
yeah,
part of the reason that he was probably kept around a little bit longer was that. But when it comes down to it, I think someone in the comments put there, why has Butler been put, had to step down for Baz's mistakes? Baz has only been in charge of this team for a couple of weeks.
Yep.
There is no Baz's mistakes here. He had no time to prepare for a tournament. He took over. They were already struggling, and they struggled.
And right? They backed him to the hilt. He had a falling out with Matthew Mott. Mott was the one who was sacked. He had a falling out with Freddie Flintoff as well, right? And Freddie was out of the system.
I don't know if it was a falling out. I just don't think he wanted him as coach, didn't he? I could be wrong, but that was my memory of that. But yeah, look, Butler's been in charge for a long time, and they haven't looked like a dynamic side for a long time. I don't think that's his fault. But I also didn't think it was Mott's fault, right?
Yeah.
I just don't think they're very good at cricket at the moment. I don't think they have the players that they need. And I've watched a bit of the Blast last year and a bit of the 100. I wasn't watching that going, oh, look what they could do here. It looks pretty ordinary when I look at the level below as well. Now, that's why I was interested to see if McCullum could do something different. He didn't do anything different. He kind of did exactly what we thought he would do in India. That didn't work. Then he came over to this part of the tournament in Pakistan. The actual tournament in Pakistan. And he changed it up again. So he changed the strategy twice and they were still shit. Like at a certain point, right? Whereas Butler's been there for a while. They've looked uninspired for quite some time now. I just don't think Butler has what he needed to turn this around. It's a bit like the Joe Root situation when he was test captain. I didn't think Joe Root was the reason they were losing, but I also didn't know if Joe Root was the person who was going to be able to change everything up, right? Yeah. And that's exactly how I see it with Butler.
I mean, he was sounding like a man on the brink of resignation when he said, I don't know if I'm part of the problem or part of the solution, but I still do feel he'll be part of the setup. They can't drop Joss Butler from the ODI team, not in my books at least. So let's see what new look England looks like. I reckon they're going to go for Brookie. Over Duckett, because they're the only two contenders, aren't they?
Sam Curran? Liam Livingston?
I think Joff? It will be Brooke, because he has captained recently, hasn't he? Harry Brooke.
Yeah. I mean, okay.
He is Baz's boy.
Yeah. Look, he's a hugely talented player. Obviously, he has some issues at the moment with his batting. Against spin bowling, I would say, in white ball cricket, he's probably still fine. I mean, he's going to play for the next few years regardless, right? So
yeah,
I suppose you give it to him. Has Duckett captained? Duckett doesn't strike me like a captain.
Yeah. Anyway, I love this comment from Arco, who says, Sam Hain, give it to Sam Hain. Yeah, there are a few Sam Hain, fanboys, whatever you'd like to call it, or endorsers, yay-sayers in the comments, always at Good Areas. There's also Super Chat with respect to England over here by Jay Viz, who says, oh, Hassan Ahmed before Jay Viz, who says, if England played as aggressive as Australia in the power play, England might have triggered an under pressure Afghanistan, England might have triggered an under pressure as Afghanistan tends to fail to when facing aggressive batting. Well, I think
what he's saying is they should have gone harder. Look, it was a flat pitch and they probably should have batted harder. They looked a little bit confused. But remember that when Phil Salt did try and hit a ball across the line, he got bowled.
Yep.
Right? And then Jamie Smith came out and blocked a bunch of balls and then tried to hit one and hit it straight up in the air. So the two aggressive shots they played, they both went out to. Like, I get your point. I just don't think they matched up very well against Afghanistan. I'm not sure Australia did either, but... Australia had enough within them to, you know, if Head gets away, there's not much Afghanistan could do against Head, right? It's kind of everyone else that they could have had their good run against.
Also, so many people in Australia were pitching in, right? Matt Short got runs, Carey got runs, Inglis got runs. Whereas for England, it was just Duckett and Root. They literally scored like 60 to 70% of their team runs, right? I don't have the exact numbers in front of me, but that's what my mental math is telling me. Anyway, Jay Viz now has a super chat, a generous one as well. So thank you, Jay. He says, don't get me wrong. England's batting has a problem, but they can't overlook the fact that their bowlers average 45 with the ball since 2024. Good point, Jay Viz.
No, I think the only thing with their bowlers, and he's right. And I mean, no one's not saying their bowling isn't a problem. We're literally saying both things are a problem. The only thing I would say with their bowling is that they have a bunch of guys who can bowl fast, a couple of which who can hold the bat, which gives you something to point towards for the future. Whereas you look at their batting a little bit more and you're like, how are they going to play spin when it feels like, if Butler doesn't regain his form, it feels like Root and Duckett are going to have to score all their runs anytime the ball spins at the moment. It's just a bigger flaw than their bowling, but their bowling's quite one-dimensional. It's just four different blokes wanging the ball into the pitch, right? And one leg spinner. So they have issues with their bowling as well. I don't think
one Liam Livingstone. How dare you forget Liam Livingstone in this?
Captain Liam Livingstone.
All right, there's one more super chat over here as well, so might as well take it right now. It's from Manu, who says, so Sunday night, a team is sitting in Pakistan getting to know that they have to play a semi-final in Dubai just a day after on Tuesday. Can unfair be any more unfair? Sure, point taken. And all of the discourse that has gone around this of how India playing all of their games in Dubai and, you know, all of these fixture fixing things that everyone's complaining about. None of this is new. There is precedence for all of this stuff. And also, you know, the moment that a hybrid model was decided, why was there no hue and cry then? Why is there hue and cry now? That's what I have an issue with.
Yeah. You want to know why?
Why?
Because no one gave a shit about Champions Trophy news 3 months out before the tournament. Let's be honest. Basically. We talked about it a lot here because that's the sort of stuff that we have to talk about. But that's why. That's why.
Yeah.
That's why, Bayram. Yeah, look, winning ICC trophies is about problem solving, right? India's had a great run here. But the last tournament, India was in America and then had to come down to the West Indies, which is completely different. And when they played in 2023, they were on a weird global, not a global, but a weird Indian tour with that side, right? And we see this from time to time. Sometimes a team won't know. That's what tournament play is like. Sometimes everything falls in perfectly for you and sometimes it doesn't. The other issue here, of course, is with the whole in India being separate. What's the way of getting around that? India don't know if their semifinals in Dubai or Abu Dhabi.
Ooh. Yeah, that's the only other way, right?
Yeah. I mean, sure. Like, I'm not sure. Well, maybe it's Sharjah.
Literally. And I mean, look, we all knew that there was always going to be a hybrid solution, if a solution at all. Otherwise, I was fearing that they might move the entire tournament out of Pakistan. And it is what it is now. I mean, I don't understand what whinging at this point will do. Sure, call it out, but call it out at the right time when it deserves to be called out, not midway through the tournament. At least that's my point of view. Which you can disagree with also. But anyway, I suppose that's England done as well, Jared. Let's move on to Bangladesh. Now, uninspiring batting once again has cost them. They were 35 for 5 against India. And India also dropped catches and, you know, were really poor in the field, which is why. I think they dropped two and missed a stumping. That's what happened. One missed stumping and two drop catches is why Bangladesh got to 230 odd. Now, big up to Tauhid Ridhoy for getting his maiden ODI ton. It was really good. And Jaquir Ali scored like a 50. I think Shanto also in the other game scored 77. But that's it. You know, Rashad Hussain showed like glimpses of brilliance and not much to write home about. We kind of always knew they didn't have much of a chance to make it forward. But like, where do you see their ODI cricket going?
Can Jaquir Ali bat in all seven positions?
I suppose so.
Then they're okay. If he can bat from 1 to 7 and they can clone him, I like him. They've got a couple of older players who don't really change anything for that. Like, do you know what I mean? Make them a particularly great team. Their bowling attack's good.
Yeah,
If you gave them Afghanistan's batting lineup, I'd be like, this is another team that's good. Hmm. But how are they ever going to make enough runs to really put themselves into a position to be able to do that? And when I've seen them play good, it's generally been in games. It's generally been in games where they've made just enough and they don't make just enough or not. So they've lost Shakib, which is huge. Mahedi I really like, but it's maybe not quite as strong. Mahedi's batting reminds me a little bit of Sam Curran. Where you're like, oh, I get it, but it's not quite a top five batter. And yet they have to kind of bat him in that position.
Hmm. He's a floater at times, right? Sometimes he'll open. Sometimes he'll come at first drop. Sometimes he's there at four. They don't really know where to put him.
Exactly. And that's because he's probably not good enough for any of those spots. And they're trying to move him around, which is fine. He still gives them an all-round option. But, you know, they've got a fast bowler who's legitimately fast. They've got the fizz still. They've got a young leg spinner as well. Like, there's some things to like about this side and you know, a bunch of seamers that we really like as well, right? Yeah. So it just, but it's never going to work unless you can make, 15% less than par regularly? Mm. And at the moment, I feel like they're about 30% less than par at best.
This is exactly why I wanted them to select Litton on vibes alone, because at least I know he can do that, right? He can do a job if he clicks. Yeah, I mean, time's up for Mushfiqur Rahim and Mahmudullah as well. I mean, time was up for those guys probably a year or two ago. But I don't know who will replace them. I'm not that well equipped with the, Bangladesh's depth chart. I don't know who are the top batters in their circuit. But batting is their Achilles heel, because as
I've watched a bit of the BPL. It's not... There isn't a lot of great talent coming through straight away.
What about that dude, Ronnie Talukdar? I've heard his name so many times.
He's about 40, isn't he?
Is he? Because he's the only other name that I can think of right now.
Ridhoy and Jaquir Ali, I do like. Shanto, you know, he's probably more suited to test cricket anyway.
Yeah.
Well, what I think the best thing they could do is drop Sumia Sarkar and then bring him back for another event, because eventually it's going to work.
Yeah, to score two boundaries off like good looking cover drives, and that'll be that for him. But yeah, I don't particularly think that their trajectory in ODI cricket is on a high. And I would say that's even below Pakistan. And that's saying something, because Pakistan is down to the shitters. So yeah, they've got to improve their batting, and they've got to kind of adopt that, you know, template where people come out and score runs freely and quickly and are reliable, and I just don't see any of that happening. So bowling attack alone can't really get them many results. Anyway, Jared, we have gotten a record super chat, I feel, in Indian rupees at least.
It's certainly a different color than we're used to, so it must mean it's a lot of money.
It is a lot of money. I can't do the math right on the top of my head, but that is at least $100, I feel. 8,900 Indian rupees. I don't know how much that will come out to. But Palash Sasidharan has made this generous, super chat. Oh, it's £80. Amazing. Thank you, Palash. Someone mentioned in the comments that's like their entire month's rent, utilities and food and whatever. So we appreciate the money. And he says, if India played in Pakistan, they should still play at all games in Lahore. And yes, they would have, you're right, without any travel. Yeah. Dubai doesn't suit India as much as Lahore, and India would have picked the team accordingly. Don't see a point in this much whinging when it was always going to be one venue. I feel like one venue does benefit you.
A one venue definitely benefits you.
Yeah.
We see that a lot, though. If you go through these schedules, it's quite common that you'll get a team who will just play in two venues in a tournament, and another team will play in like four or five. Like, people just don't always look at this stuff. But when it's India, obviously... People look at every detail. And to be honest, we just had the stupid thing that happened in the last World Cup, in the T20 World Cup, right? Which, again, shouldn't have happened, right? Yeah. But that's where we are at the moment. Lahore, I'm not sure Lahore helps them more than Dubai, because Dubai allows them to play the two finger spinners.
Yeah, they can play both of their all-rounders in Akshar and Jadeja. And then they can also play a certain Varun or Kuldeep, right? Which they're opting for Kuldeep. So I think Dubai suits them more. Plus, Lahore has seen dew. What if India are forced to bat first and then they have to defend a total with dew around and it's a team like South Africa, you know, or England, or Australia. I meant Australia. You know?
You meant a good side. But I think also... I don't think there's a pitch that doesn't suit them. Like, they have the options to go in any direction that they wanted to.
Yeah.
But Dubai is a very good ground, I think, for the kind of team that they have. But as Palash says as well, they did know they were playing there. Yeah. And so they have the ability to pick for that. But if you were asking me, if I was working for them, which ground I would rather for them, I would pick Dubai over, especially with the bigger boundaries, and just be like, good luck hitting Ravi Jadeja and Akshar Patel for regular sixes, everyone.
Yeah, same. Also, if they had to travel to Pakistan for these games, they weren't going to stay there, right? So the solution, the Lahore solution, was that they live in Amritsar.
Oh, they were just going to...
Yes, and then they fly in every day from Amritsar to Lahore, which are practically like neighboring cities, right, on the border. Or they might have come on a tour bus or something. I don't know. But either way, they would never...
Ride their bikes over. I think that was the plan. If I saw, I think the ICC said, we've got some scooters. who likes a skateboard?
Yeah. But also, like, if they were doing that, then that would have its own tax, right, on their it would have been taxing on their fatigue, whatever. I'm not making sense, but it would have fatigued
them. Who was it in the last T20 World Cup? Was it Sri Lanka who was complaining about the long trip?
And exactly.
I've worked with teams. I know it sounds stupid, but it means everything else is changed at the other end. Whereas, you know, the best thing that you do is stay next to the ground, right? Like if there's a good hotel next to the ground, it's just the best thing.
Yeah, and those long commutes could have, you know, had a fatigue element attached to them. So I don't think that's true. But yeah, I mean, look, it's not like the Lahore wicket wouldn't have suited them, because if it's a batting track and they're batting second or first, they could win those games. So yeah.
Just on this, D.S. Dennis said, I mean, England complaining about advantages is funny. No one bats an eyelid when the first three World Cups were held in England. They did, right? It's just that no one actually pitched for them at that time.
Hmm.
The first time it actually got pitched, it got moved. No one really wanted the World Cups because they weren't really seen as a big thing. It's the same when England had the back-to-back Champions Trophy. It doesn't quite work the way that you think it does, DS10, because they were the ones who wanted the tournament, right? Hmm. And as other teams wanted the tournament, England didn't have another one until 99, right? Yeah. So that doesn't equate. There's other things in cricket that do equate to what you've said. For instance, the veto... power. Yeah. You've got what happened in the first ever Champions Trophy, where England should have been made to play in the qualifiers. So there are other things, but what you've said there doesn't quite make sense. It just wasn't seen as a thing that everyone was massively keen for at that stage.
Yeah. All right. One more super chat from Jack over here, who says, any pace all rounders. Are pace all-rounders given more value than spin ones? I'm aware conditions would dictate this, but if Stokes and Jadeja were in the same team, who would you pick if there's only one opening? I feel like, you know, at that point, if I have to pick between them, I would look at what sort of role I need for a batter if the conditions aren't, you know, in the equation.
Well, so that's not a fair comparison, because you're assuming that Stokes and Jadeja are both the same level of ODI player, whereas Jadeja, I would assume, is almost 10 over...
Is he talking about ODIs over here, though? I don't think so.
I would have thought so, because we were talking about ODIs.
Hmm. He hasn't mentioned it anywhere.
So my point would be, though, that if you're doing ODIs, Stokes is actually really hard to get 10 overs out of in an ODI, because he doesn't fit into... He doesn't bowl with... He can't bowl with a brand new white ball because he can't control it, and he can't bowl very well at the death, right? Which was England's... That was England's problem with Stokes. That's why they had all those other all-rounders around him, right? Because he didn't quite work on his own. But yeah, in that case, they're two completely different players. If you had two all-rounders who were both exactly the same talent and exactly the same role, and one's a seam bowler and one's a spin bowler, you pick the seam bowler. But the reason you pick the seam bowler is it is much easier to find an Aidan Markram or a Darren Lehman or a, you know... Travis Head or Matthew Short or a Glenn Maxwell than it is to find a legitimate seamer backup. Right. Yeah. So who's the last New Zealand Ganguly? Can you think of any others? Hansi Cronje, that's going back a long way now. You don't actually have that many teams who have like a sixth or seventh bowler who's like who's a decent seamer. So it's much harder to find that than it is to be like, Michael Clarke, can you bowl four overs here?
Yeah.
right? You find a lot of Michael Clarks and you don't find a lot of Sourav Gangulis. That's the biggest difference.
Mr. Wall is saying Darren Mitchell, and Vishal is saying Colin de Grandhom. He did say New Zealand, and you've got Scott Styris, Nathan Astle. They are New Zealand's of all of these dibbly dobblers, right?
Yeah, and New Zealand's a little bit different. I should say some of those players are different. They don't bowl Darren Mitchell, right? Yeah. Very often. Whereas if Darren Mitchell was a spinner and he was an offie or a left arm finger spinner, he would bowl more because of the kind of thing. But Darren Mitchell's bowling is not particularly that useful. They use it in emergencies and they use it when the conditions go. So I mean, even Jimmy in Darren Mitchell's case,
there was Jimmy Neesham not too long ago, right? In New Zealand.
And again, you've got a player there. You don't have many of those guys that come from outside of New Zealand. New Zealand, you can go back to Astle, Larson, Harris, McMillan.
Corey Anderson. Let's not forget Corey.
Yeah. New Zealand have had lots of those players. Generally in cricket, it's easier to find someone if you need an emergency bowler to be able to find someone who can bowl spin, because finger spin isn't that hard at the defensive end. If you want to be Ashwin, it's friggin' hard, right? But if you want to be Darren Lehman or Viv Richards, right? Mm. It's not that hard to just dart a few balls in and get away with it a little bit when you need it to. Whereas it's very hard look at Manus Labuschagne or Mike Hussey trying to become seam bowlers. It's like, come on, guys, what do we do? Was it AB de Villiers bowling the 2015 World Cup semi-final? It's like, that's actually hard to do. To be a good, effective seamer.
Hey, right? When the Manus just bowled seam up recently.
Yeah, and he doesn't do it anymore. So it's a very, very different kind of thing. So generally, it's much harder to find the seamers. And then what that also allows for is that all around the world, you can basically play three or four seamers. There aren't that many places in the world where you can play two or three spinners. So the mass question also doesn't work as well.
You know what I would want, probably, if the conditions aren't available to me, is a Bo Webster or Andrew Simons type of all-rounder who can give me both.
Yes. Mark Waugh is probably another one who could have done that, although didn't do
Garfield
it in the game that
much. Sobers, although I would take him anywhere.
Sobers is pretty handy from that point of view as well. It's just a bit harder to find those kinds of bowlers, whereas, and that's not a slight on Jadeja, because he's a proper spinner. No one's saying he's like Darren Lehman or Kedar Yadav or someone like that, right? Mm. But what we are saying is you can sometimes cheat with a batter who can bowl a little bit when it's spin, and that's a lot harder to do with seam.
Yeah, fair. Also, we've got Foxer One. I think that's how you say your name, Fox, who is asking, what do you all think of Wasim Akram imploring that the minimum boundaries need to be fixed at 70 meters? I'm not entirely opposed to that idea. Sometimes I really get pissed off at boundaries which are below 60 meters.
What are we going to do, though? Are we going to move the Trent Bridge grandstand?
Yeah, because you've got so many different surfaces, right, in a single facility.
Yeah, but Adelaide Oval, I don't think you could have square boundaries that are 70 meters, could you?
Yeah,
do you know what I mean? There are big playing surfaces with small boundaries. Like, not that Trent Bridge is particularly big, but there's some others with some big ones. So I don't really see how that works. I understand it from a idea of cricket grounds are random and we should make them slightly less random. And also, if you want to get to the golf thing, right? Like, at a certain point, we can't make people hit the ball any softer than they're hitting it. We can't make the golf courses longer in some cases. And we can't make... Do you know what I mean? So I understand that, but I don't understand if Wasim Akram is going to go to Trent Bridge with a pickaxe and actually dig out the square leg boundary, which for my mind is probably about 30 meters wide. Like, I know it's probably longer than that, but it looks about 30 meters. Like, it's not going to happen.
Yeah, fair enough. All right. Supriyo Mundal with a very generous super chat as well. Not Palash level generous, but good enough. We'll take it. And this is a very interesting question. Varun, you're going to have to help us because Supriyo wants to know, what's the margin England has to defeat South Africa by for Afghanistan to slide in on net run rate? I don't think it has to be ridiculous, right? Yeah, so if South Africa make 300, England make it in 11 overs or win by 207 runs. It's basically impossible, dude. Afghanistan are out. And we know all four semi-finalists, but we don't know who will play who. And I reckon Jared and I will probably jump on live after the India game on Sunday. And then we can kind of talk about that game and preview the semis. That's our plan for now. And Jared's also flying out tomorrow to Boston for exciting stuff, which we will not tell you about.
You can tell people. It's fine. I'm going to the Sloan Analytics Conference. I think I'm allowed to say I'm going there. Or I've just been cancelled. I'm not sure.
Yeah. Anyway, we've got one more team left, Pakistan. I don't know if we really want to talk about them because the highlight.
I kind of feel like we covered them in previous pods, haven't we? I mean, they're not very good.
They're not very good. 161 dots versus New Zealand, 147 dots versus India. That's 51.2 overs of dot balls in less than 100
overs.
More
dots than an Australian Indigenous painting.
Yeah. So, I mean,
well, I've never heard anyone use that line before, but it makes sense.
They didn't even play it 100 overs and more, like 51.2 overs with dots. And then they didn't have a spinner properly. Like no one was backing up a Abrar. Too many middle order batters of the same mold. It's just same old stuff for Pakistan. You can literally watch a lot of our previous videos to get an idea of where they're at. And I feel like they just, at this point, Jared, they need to select a development squad for the New Zealand tour. Because when will they do that?
So, yeah, no, everything you've said is right, but I just saw this comment come up. Matthew Griffiths says, if I recall correctly, the Trent Bridge boundaries, the short one to the big stand is 45 meters. I mean, that's a lot of stand that Wasim Akram's going to have to go out there I'm using that because it's more form. There are some grounds who can do it. Don't get me wrong, but it. Eden Park in New Zealand, what are they going to do? They would have to move all four stands, wouldn't they? To get basically. one boundary. So he's right, but I don't know how you do it.
Or you move the boundary rope into the stands and the fielders can just sit down while they're, you know, boundary riding. That's another option. Anyway, another super chat by Foxer1 says, I think the age of seam bowling all-rounders is over. A spin bowling all-rounder just provides you with better control. Look, I mean, Hardik Pandya is worth his weight in platinum because he's a seam bowling all-rounder when there are not many around. Similar for Azmatullah. Afghanistan are always going to play him. So I don't know. I disagree.
I don't agree with this at all. Yeah. Like, I get your point. The problem with spin bowling all-rounders, Jadeja's obviously different. But in general, they probably have to bowl in the middle overs, right?
Yeah.
If you have an Omazai or even an Hardik, right, and you could put, if Cameron Green never becomes the bowler we hope he would become, Jason Holder was probably another one.
Yeah.
They can actually bowl all the way through the innings, which gives you way more flexibility, right? Yeah. And so, again, that's a more important option. But I mean, I understand your point, but I don't. I think you're probably going spin bowling all rounders are better. And they, you know, generally we have seen Jadeja and Shakib have probably outperformed Stokes and Holder in ODI cricket over the last couple of years. But that might be because they're better players, not better suited to the format, specifically players, rather than actually better players, if that makes sense.
Yeah, no, that checks out. Also, just before we end this, Jared, it's always fun to do a bit of prediction work, right? So give me your two semi-final fixtures. I actually feel like somehow England beats South Africa and there's a South Africa versus India semi in Dubai and Australia square up versus New Zealand. And of course, India beat New Zealand. That's what I'm thinking.
I just can't see England. They're almost evens on the betting markets. I can't see how England beats South Africa. I thought at times, even against Afghanistan, it looked like they were half checked out where they were like they tried, but there was a couple of times where I was like, do we have to try? And then they tried rather than just going all in. I just don't think.
Shreyas Warrior has asked a very important question. Who is captaining England tomorrow?
I don't think they've announced it yet, right? If I'm not mistaken. But it would be Brooke or Duckett, probably.
Yeah, I think it would be Brooke.
I mean, yeah, it might just be Root. They might just give it to Root and just go from that point of view. But I think it will be New Zealand versus South Africa and Australia versus India makes the most sense to me at the moment, unless something bizarre happens.
All right, you guys leave your predictions in the comment section below as well. And thank you for all of your interactions during this live.
Definitely.
And for all of your super chats today. We've made quite a lot of money on super chats. So thanks for that, guys. Love you guys. And we'll be back soon enough on another show. Sunday, actually. We're coming live on Sunday to preview the semis. So keep an eye out
shows
for that.
There's definitely no shows tomorrow, but there is a big feature on the main channel about the greatest ODI batters of all time, which will annoy that one guy who doesn't understand the stats.
And you'll get a quick picks video tomorrow as well, because the audio is already out, so that video goes out tomorrow. But anyway, that's it for today. Have a good one, guys. Just a quick reminder, you can go to goodareas.co and bookmark that webpage, and that can prove to be a one-stop shop for all the work that we do as part of this team, whether it be written content, videos, or podcasts. And that's it from us. We'll see you soon enough. Enjoy yourselves, and goodbye.
thank you for listening. This podcast has an ad-free version via Patreon, where there are also many other extras as well, including a Discord channel where you can chat to me directly. There is a link to the Patreon in the show notes. We are an independent podcast, so support us any way you can. Maybe give us a review, subscribe, or share on social media. All of these things help us. And when it comes to podcasts, word of mouth is always the best way of making it grow. If we had a guest on, chances are their socials are in the show notes. Please support everyone who comes on this show. I am Jared Kimber, and this is my network. But we also have hosts and co-hosts like Bairam Kazi and Estelle Vasudevan. This network is overseen by Nick McCorriston, and each episode is produced by Ishit Kaburka at Sound Potion Studio. Mukunda Bandredi, or Muku as most people will know, is the head of our YouTube channels, and he also helps out with so many other things like the podcast recordings. And there's so many other people we could thank here, but I just want to thank all the listeners and all the people who help behind the scenes that make this podcast work.